Appreciate the opportunity to be here with you, and it's kind of a hard segue after that great looking at the next generation of young people that's coming on the scene and the leaders who have dedicated themselves to them, and then you read a passage like that. Job is going through terrible difficulties. In fact, the first time I ever read Job was actually after I became a believer. Now, Job's, of course, in the Old Testament text. It's not Jewish, though. It's not Jewish. You know why? Because Job is a contemporary of Abraham. Jewish people hadn't even come. So we're talking about people in general. There was still knowledge of God, but things were a little bit different. And the first time I ever read Job, I went to a person who I really respected, a Jewish believer, very experienced. I read this book before I went to bed. I read the whole book. I was depressed. I just said, how is this book in the Bible? There seems to be, and remember, I was ignorant. I hadn't read it before, but there seems to be such little hope. Everything, the poor guy, think about it. He's outside the city because he's got a disease. No one will have any interaction with him. He's scraping his skin. His kids have died. His wife doesn't want to be near him. He is an outcast and alone. It's a horrible feeling. And I'm looking forward to trying to explain a little of this and see what we encounter. We'll go from one depressing thing to another. Our magazine, Israel My Glory, is not depressing, although this issue is depressing. The theme of this particular issue of Israel My Glory. Do you know that Israel was chosen by God to reflect His glory? Jerusalem is the city of peace. Well, let me tell you, both those things right now look real dim. Jerusalem isn't a city of peace right now. Hasn't been. Always trouble. And Israel, right now, is not reflecting God's glory. And as we think about that nation, there's a great battle going on. Really, it's a battle for the hearts and minds of believers, an evangelical battle. Do you know that there are numerous people who would be Bible believers who believe that God is finished with Israel, that He's done, that the promises that He gave are broken because of their putting Christ on the cross. This is the view of many evangelicals. Not Friends of Israel, and not this church, by the way, which I'm thankful for. And you'll find in our issue, this issue, it centers on that whole aspect of the place of Israel in the hearts and minds, not just of evangelicals. Do you know there's an increasing population of Jewish Israel haters. Jewish Israel haters. Personally, I would call them Jewish self-haters, anti-Semites. You wonder how that's possible? Read this and you'll see some of the key Jewish key speakers at a rally for Sabeel, it's called. It's actually pro-Palestinian. There's a couple of Jewish speakers. George Soros helped sponsor, by the way, George Soros, who's an atheist, but he's Jewish. He's sponsoring a lot of this kind of activity. So I'd like you to get the magazine, not to be depressed, although you probably will be, but to be informed. And so we give you the magazine. Now, there's some good news. I'm a Jewish guy with a Jewish organization, and we give you such a deal. Such a deal. All the literature on that table is for your taking if you're interested. The magazine is free. If you want to get it on your smartphone or iPad, there's a little check there. You could get it free. And by the way, it's a better deal, because if you sign up and check digital, automatically when you connect to the digital magazine, you'll get back issues as well. So, such a deal. Encourage you to pick it up. You know, in high school, we were required to watch a movie. It was passed throughout high school. I mean, I heard about it a couple of years even before I had to take this health course. Maybe some of you might remember seeing them. I don't even know if they show it anymore, but it was about people who were addicted to smoking and chain smokers and the effects that had upon them. And I remember watching them smoke through the little hole that was inserted when they're sick. And it was bad, really bad. Well, I can't tell you that we were, as young people, that we felt sorry for them. I mean, after all, if you're smoking like crazy and won't give it up and continue to smoke while they're treating you, you reap what you sow. Heavy drinkers who even become alcoholics get cirrhosis of the liver. Again, you hear about it, you hear about abuse of alcohol, and you hear something like that, you don't feel great about it, but you don't say, oh, that poor person. That they brought that upon themselves. But what about a drinker, an abusive drinker, who ends up driving and then kills somebody? The person that they killed was innocent. They didn't reap what they sowed. And so there's these difficulties in putting together why certain things happen to people. I'll give you another example. Family that my wife knows very well, they're related to her. Young couple at one time, they're not young anymore, at one time, they want to dedicate their lives, go to Africa and serve the Lord. They have, I believe, one child at the time. They go off, first learn the language overseas in France, and then on to Africa they go. Their son is born. He's born with the cord wrapped around his neck, pronounced dead. Father goes home, thinking that his second child is dead, and then receives news he has to come back to the hospital. He'd been revived. And now for 50 years, he has been completely helpless. And that family served in Africa with this difficulty, trial. How could this happen to a family so dedicated? How could this be? More modern example. We have a young man at in our organization, works in our home office. He's got three kids, just had twins. So he's got five kids right now. He and his wife have determined that they're going to send their kids to Christian school. That's their decision. He's working three jobs. She works a shift overnight. They are dedicated to the kind of teaching that you heard here for Sunday school. And part of their plan is that his mother, only 61 years old, is part of the plan. Because when the wife works overtime, or works overnight, it extends into his hours, and so the kids have to be watched. So she's part of the plan and loves it. Oh, yeah, I'll take care of the kids. And then with two more on the way, could hardly wait. Yep, everything was falling into place, except the part of terminal cancer for the mother. Why does this stuff happen? How could it be that somebody so dedicated, so programmed to do the right thing can have this particular thing happen? I'll give you another one, but I'll comment after I show you this video.
Maybe in some of the recordings that we did earlier on, what I wanted to show was, you know, how wonderful things were. And I think we gave the impression that, you know, all is good now. And there is good now, but not all is good. In fact, every morning when I wake up, when I see the light outside, that I know the first move I make, I just, my whole body can go into spasms, and if those spasms go longer than like a second, then all day long I'm struggling to get my energy back, kick and kick to get even sitting up. And if Jenny knows that I'm getting up, because she's already up working, then she'll come in and help me. But otherwise, I mean, it's a struggle just to sit up. You know, stand up, and that's the worst. Standing up is just agony in the morning, you know, trying to get these stilts because I can't feel from my waist on down. Well, and I can't feel most of my arms, and I certainly can't feel my hands. Now I can feel a little bit on my upper back, but to stand up, and all those muscles are pulling, and that I can feel. I can feel them pulling, and then I can only barely shuffle into the bathroom, and all the stuff I got to go through there. You know, just Jenny will usually give me a washcloth, or I can get it myself. And you know, I just feel really fortunate that I can rub my face, and I can even get my right hand on top of my head and behind a little bit. But that whole time, my left hand is all curled up. And then once I'm done with all that, then I've got to go out and sit in my wheelchair and eat breakfast. And when my hands are spasticity's high, I mean, I have to look at everything so that I can lift it, look at the spoon, and, you know, try to eat my Cheerios. I mean, unbelievable as it might seem, I can actually drive. I got to reach up and get the keys, which is a real stretch in the morning. You know, I can only do it with my right hand, but then trying to find a place where they'll go in and not fall, because picking something up off the floor, I can do it, but I got to be really careful. And so I get my keys in here, and then I go out and I walk out to the van, and getting into the van is a bit of a struggle. But then getting the seat belt, which is back here, and clicking that, and then, and but you know, when the pain starts coming in driving, I realize, man, I mean, I can go places by myself, even though I really miss doing it all with Jenny. Tech, and you know, try to help out a little bit. And after an update, or after just talking with the guys over here who've been doing such a great job, mm-hmm. This morning they poured a slab for a huge new building that was given to us, and all we had to furnish was the slab. And I mean, I woke up, been praying for good weather, and I woke up and I just so desperately wanted to come over here, and I just realized, I mean, until it's light, I couldn't possibly walk around outside. But, you know, getting to do some things at iTech and being able to stay at home alone for a little bit so Jenny can go out shopping and can get away once in a while without having to have somebody come sit with me, I mean, that's just really incredible freedom. But boy, it comes at a price of pain, but I'm just so thankful. None of us knows what our life is going to be like. I wouldn't mind dying, but if I'm going to stay here longer, I want it to count, and I want my grandchildren to see that life isn't good when everything is fitting together right. Life is good because we know that we have a hope when this life is done. My theme has been, let God write your story. You know, He doesn't promise all easy chapters, but He does promise that if we let Him write our story, that in the last chapter, if not before, He will make sense of all the other chapters, and then He will take us to live with Him in paradis, as Pastor Nook, a friend of mine in West Africa, says. I want God to still write my story.
I don't know how many of you know who that is. His name is Steve Saint. Saint of Nate Saint. And back January 8, 1956, five missionaries were killed. They were murdered. Steve Saint was 5 years old. His dad was murdered. The man that killed his dad ultimately became a believer in Jesus Christ, and one of the best friends Steve Saint ever had and has. Now, Steve Saint, at 5 years old, is now without a dad. That's anguish for a lifetime. For a lifetime. A number of years later, as a father, his daughter goes off for a year of missionary service. A year of missionary service. She's going to come back home. She's one of, I think, four or five children Steve and Jenny have as their children. And they meet her at the airport, big gala, you know, all the family there, signs. You know how it is, those of you who've received people when they come back from a trip. And they have this party. She leaves for a while, and one of his other children say to him, she's not feeling real well. She's asking you to come to her room. So goes to her room, and Stephanie says to him, Dad, would you pray? I just have a terrible headache. So Steve bows in prayer, asks the Lord to remove the headache from his 21-year-old daughter who had been gone 1 year. And as he said amen, she crumpled in his arms. She had an aneurysm and died. Now, it's a few years later. Steve, who is very interested in flying, iTech is a company that he has put together, trying to make it easy for missionaries to get around in flying a little gizmo by yourself, and you can go all over the place. And he's done a lot of research, and his company has done a lot of neat things. Well, they had a trial, and a propeller flew off and hit him in the head. And so Steve was incapacitated. This was a year after the accident. It's now been over almost 3 years. If you want to see how things progressed, just type in Steve Saint I could show you a number of videos, but that's not my purpose here. My purpose here is to give you an idea of people who, it seems, are good people, and bad things happen. By the way, title for a good book. Rabbi Kushner wrote a book, Why Bad Things Happen to Good People. Bestseller, still being sold. As a rabbi, his conclusion was that God can't take care of everything. That's an interesting way to take a man who went through seminary, Jewish seminary. See, his son was born with a disease that ages you prematurely. And so his son died as a teenager. And it took all the training that the rabbi had. And even then, he was not satisfied. Because he was trained that God can do anything. All-powerful. All-knowing. And he thought, if God is all-powerful and allowed my son to get this disease, then that means he's a spiteful, hateful God. And I don't believe that. So therefore, God is not all-powerful. Well, is that the answer? Well, that's what we want to look at in the time that we have left in this story, true story, Job. Now, in Job chapter 18, the previous chapter, in Job chapter 18, Bildad, a friend of Job, comes out to meet him. In fact, there are three friends that Job has. I'm sure you've heard, those of you who've been involved in churches and Bible reading for a long time, I'm sure you know about the three friends of Job and how they're commended for at least showing up, trying to help him, console him. And for the first 7 days they get there, they don't say anything. Pretty wise. Isn't it hard to talk to people who are suffering? Hospital visits, a nursing home visit. What do I say? That's why so many people won't go. Because they just don't know what to say. May I encourage you, follow the lead of Job's three friends. And even if you don't know what to say, and even if you say nothing and you just go and sit with that person, that's a wonderful thing to do. But they open their mouth. Not a good thing. Not a good thing. And in fact, when Bildad opens his mouth, when you read chapter 18, he is sure that Job is a first-class sinner and that all the things that he's experiencing, he's responsible. He's like the smoker who keeps smoking regardless of what happens. So everything, it's all his fault. Why don't you come to your senses? You could read all of chapter 18 and Bildad goes on and on and on. Remember, Job, he's got an illness. I mean, his skin is falling off. It itches. He's trying to scrape it off. He's uncomfortable. He's throwing dust upon himself. He's outside of the city gates. No one will have anything to do with him. His friends come out, start off well, but then they rip into him like bees on honey. Not exactly what you want to hear. But that's what Bildad does. And in fact, don't we sometimes look at people who are afflicted and wonder, what did they do? God is getting them. You know, when you read Luke chapter 13, the first five verses, you find out there was a tower that fell down and killed 18 people. And they're asking Jesus, what did these guys do? These sinners. And Jesus had to explain, wait a minute. You're assuming they did something. They're no better or worse than anybody else. Not very far from here, a number of years ago, 9/11 happened. Do you know in 9/11, I would make the argument that there were some of the nastiest people who died in those towers. And probably some of the most wonderful. We don't know about their individual lives, what they were thinking, what they were doing. Were there any cheaters, adulterers? Were there people who were teaching Sunday school? How do you reconcile 3,000 people dying who it seems the only thing they did was go to work that day? These things are hard for us to figure out. And then Job gets to answer. Job gets to answer in chapter 19. And we read it already, and I'm going to highlight some of the things that Job says in chapter 19. First of all, he says, these 10 times, verse 3, these 10 times you have reproached me. You are not ashamed that you have wronged me. Job is listening to what Bildad has said, and he knows what he's saying is not true. By the way, in chapter 18, what Bildad does say is that there are terrors of death. Terrors of death. Actually, in verse 14, death is called the king of terrors. And you know, for the person who's guilty of sin, their sin. And when I talk about not individual sin, you see, even though this isn't Jewish, because there aren't Jewish people, by the way, there's no Christians during this period either. There are no Christians or Jews. These are just people who there's still a knowledge of God around. And by the way, Bildad knew about it. The other two friends knew about it. Job knew about it. And you see, when we talk about sin, we're not talking about individual sin. We're talking about the problem of sin. You read Genesis chapter 1, and Adam and Eve, we know that they were placed in a wonderful place. They were totally innocent. And God said, no, don't do this. And that was enough. And it'd be enough for each one of us, by the way. I don't know how long it would take us, longer, shorter, than it took first Eve and then Adam, but all of us would have done it. Sin comes into the world, and that's the issue. That's why there is the terror of death. It hovers over each one of us from the time we are born. You don't believe that? There's a video that's going around. It's gone viral. Cincinnati Bengals fringe player was going to be cut. But the Bengals were gracious, very gracious. They kept him on the payroll. They kept him on the taxi squad or whatever they call it because he has a 4-year-old daughter who has cancer. And if they cut him, he'd be without insurance. And there is a video. You have to be heartless not to be moved to tears as this football player is driving his 4-year-old to the hospital for surgery. She's bald from the chemo treatments, and he's encouraging her, and she's smiling in the back seat. What did that little girl do? She didn't do anything. But she's a sinner. Not that she sinned a particular sin. She's born into the problem that all of us have. Sin. And because of the consequences of that sin, all the things that we just wonder about can happen to anyone at any time for whatever reason. The terrors of death, that's what Bildad talks about. The consequences of your action, Job, you're trying to run away and death is going to catch you. That's literally what Bildad is saying. And so, verse 4 in chapter 19, Job says, and if indeed I have erred, if indeed I have sinned unintentionally, is what verse 4 is saying, my error remains with me. If indeed you exalt yourself against me, you see, you think you're holier than thou. Know then that God has wronged me. Job is confident that as far as he knows, he hasn't done anything to deserve the things that he's gotten. And he goes on, and he's angry, and he's frustrated. In verse 7, I cry aloud, there's no justice. There's no justice. Have you ever felt that way? By the way, I think you can make a case in our own country that there are people who have money and are guiltier than others who are able to get away with things that those with less money can't. I think you can make a good case for that. And indeed, there are people who can legitimately say there doesn't seem to be justice. Verse 8, he says, and he, God, has set darkness in my path. Darkness in my path. You know, there's a pretty famous school down in South Carolina called Bob Jones. Or Bob Jones. Bob Jones the first, second. One of them said this, never doubt in the darkness what God has taught you in the light of day. Oh, is that great advice. As we think of the kids, as you come here for first service of breaking of bread, as you hear various messages, we know certain things about God. We know them to be true. He's holy and righteous. We know that Jesus came to pay a penalty for sin, and we talked about that in the first service. And these all are heard during the light of day, but then comes the darkness. Light is usually associated with life and darkness associated with death. Have you ever been up in the middle of the night? Can't sleep? Maybe it's because of what you saw, what happened to you, which happened to Steve Saint. Pain, intense pain, emotional pain, financial pain. Who knows what kind of pain? And you begin to wonder, just like Job. Verse 9, he has stripped me of my glory. He's taken the crown from my head. He breaks me down on every side, and I am gone. My hope he has uprooted like a tree. He's alone. Job has heard what Bildad said. He knows it's not true. But he's in anguish. This is real. This is reality TV without the TV. He has kindled his wrath against me, and he counts me as one of his enemies. God is against me, and I don't even know why. He's against me. I'm alone. His troops come together and build up their road against me. They encamp all around my tent. He has removed my brothers far from me, and my acquaintances are completely estranged from me. So, first of all, God's his enemy, and now he's going to talk about his acquaintances, his relatives, his friends. And it's not pretty. He's abandoned by all of them. His close friends, verse 14, have forgotten me. They count me as a stranger. I'm an alien in their sight. My breath's offensive to my wife. I'm repulsive to the children of my own body, and young children despise me. I arise and they speak against me. All my close friends abhor me, and those whom I love have turned against me. My bones cling to my skin and to my flesh. And a very famous expression, I've escaped by the skin of my teeth. He escaped death by the skin of his teeth. Look, this is a sad situation, but a real one. As real as Steve Saint trying to wake up every morning. As real as the memories of his daughter. As real as that colleague of mine with the plans that he has and his mother terminally ill and not able to fit that plan. Those are real situations. Real families. Is there anything good? Is there anything? Is there any hope for a person like this? Is there any hope for Steve Saint? Is there any hope for that relative of my wife's who for over 50 years has been taking care of that handicapped son to the detriment of their own physical body? How could their good come of that? Maybe the rabbi was right. maybe God just can't do certain things. Is that what we're to think? Verse 23, oh, that my words were written, oh, that they were inscribed in a book, that they were engraved on a rock with an iron pen and lead forever. And then verse 25, for I know that my Redeemer lives. Can I say that again? For I know that my Redeemer lives. Believe it or not, this Redeemer in Hebrew is called a Goel. It's the same Goel used in the book of Ruth, a kinsman Redeemer. When you read in Deuteronomy, the Torah, about a kinsman redeemer, there are three requirements for a kinsman redeemer. Number one, he had to be a kinsman. That is, he had to be related. Number two, he had to be able to pay a price in order to redeem. And number three, he had to be willing. He had to be willing to pay the price. That's the connotation in Ruth. Here in Job, the idea is this redeemer, someone who's going to come on the scene, who in the midst of Job's anguish, where it seems his situation isn't fair, and yes, in his mind, he's an enemy to God. He can't think of anything he's done as far as sinning, an intentional sin, but God's his enemy. It looks hopeless for him. He's mad at Bildad. He is as frustrated as you can be. And yet, even in that state of mind and being, he has hope. There's hope. My Redeemer lives. And he, that is his Redeemer, will stand at last on earth. There's a day coming. Job is reconciled to dying. He knows it's over for him, and probably in this physical state would welcome it because he has a hope. His hope is his Redeemer who's going to stand on earth. And after he's buried in the ground, when his skin is destroyed, as it will be for every one of us, should the rapture not happen and we die first, our bodies go in the ground from dust to dust, but Job has hope. Because in his flesh, he shall see God. In his flesh, he will see God. Look, God's good news came before there were any Jewish people. It was going on while Jewish people were being established in bondage, which, by the way, every year we celebrate. In fact, just as a side note, we're in the middle of the seventh feast of the book of Leviticus. Now, go to your Bibles, book where the pages are still stuck together. That's chapter 23 of Leviticus. You could read about the seven feasts. The seventh one is the one of restoration. It's the third of the fall feasts. Start off with Passover redemption. You end with restoration at tabernacles. What a beautiful picture of God's program for his people. As we think of Job, good news. Is there good news? There's good news during the time of the Jewish people. But the best news of all came when the promises of the Old Testament were fulfilled in the person and work of Jesus Christ. So you and I have an advantage that Job never had. Oh, he had hope. He knew he was going to stand in his flesh even after he died. He knew it. He believed it. It was the only thing he could cling to. Isn't it good to know for us, we have more knowledge. We have the New Testament as well as the Old Testament. We have the whole story. We know how it's all going to end. But let me ask you a couple questions as we close. Terrors of death. Are you terrified? I could tell you, there have been times in my life not so much terrified of death. I'm terrified of certain kinds of diseases that might ultimately lead to death. That's real. In the middle of the night, have you been up? You're worried? Not so much. You're young. I'm not sick. I feel great. But the mortgage is due next month. And you're fretting like crazy. Whatever it is, have you allowed your terrors to overtake the reality of what's in the middle of the day? Light and darkness. Goes on to say in verse 27, how my heart yearns within me. I'm just a guest here today. It's been a while since I've been here, but I encourage every one of you to go through those double doors, keep walking straight and open the other door. I don't know what, I guess it's called the fellowship room. Is that right, Don? It's called the fellowship room. I happen to go into that room before the service, and I looked to the right, and I saw the most remarkable bulletin board that I've seen in quite some time. I'm not going to say anything more than that. If you don't know what's up there, go there. You see, when we hide the Word in our heart, when we read the Word, when we are intimate with our God, those times in the middle of the night that Job had, and maybe you have, those times are the times when those things I read on that bulletin board take on significant meaning. We have been given such a privilege in that God in His love opened our eyes to the truth of Jesus Christ. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, you're at least in the right place. Ask the person who brought you. Talk to Don Dunkerton or somebody else here. And they'll tell you, Jesus paid it all, and all to Him we owe. How can a Steve Saint, who has experienced incredible difficulties, be willing to subject himself to putting these messages for the world to see? Why would he do that? Because to him it's significant that we look and see man's foibles, man's sin, and the amazing love that God has shown him and you and me. Oh, that Rabbi Kushner could understand the truth. God is not limited. God is in the business of performing a greater thing than ourselves. That relative I told you about, who has that handicapped son, I remember I was with him one day at his shop. He is a tremendously gifted guy with all kinds of wood, and he can build anything and do anything. And I was back there with him, and I said, Dick, to me, I could never do what you've been doing. You're such a testament. I just couldn't do it. And he looked at me and he said, you're right. You couldn't. And that's why God gave it to me. By His grace, I can. What an amazing perspective. To look outside of yourself and look to see what is God going to do if I commit myself to Him regardless of the circumstances. Job did get to write that book, by the way. He asked about, I'd like to write these words. He did write them. It was a hard life. He had no idea about the battle between God and Satan. He didn't know that he was in the middle of a battle. He didn't do anything wrong. But God was using him for you and for me and for countless generations who read that book. That, at first, you might get a little depressed, but ultimately, you're blessed. And I hope you've been blessed as you hear. Heavenly Father, What a good God you are. We have to be able to say that midst of disease and difficulty. We have to be able to say that in the middle of sin, the sin-sick world that we live in. You're our good God. And yet you're an all-powerful God. You could remove anyone's trouble in batting an eye, less than batting an eye. But yet you allow these things to happen. And we don't know the reason for everything that happens. But we know that you allow them to happen for a purpose. In Job's life, individually, it was to give him hope beyond this earth. For us who read the story, it's to teach us the tremendous value in looking upward in the midst of difficulty and trusting in the promises that you give. Oh God, if there's folks here who are hurting, having difficulty hanging on to some of those promises, I pray that Job would be an encouragement to them today. Thank you to know that his Redeemer, our Redeemer, lives. And there will be a day he will stand on the earth. Our kinsman Redeemer, our Messiah, our Savior, our King. Oh God, until that time, I pray you'd be close to those who are experiencing great difficulty. Give us wisdom to stand next to them and to be a Bildad in one sense, to be there for them, but not be a Bildad and rip into them. May we be an encouragement and help. For Jesus' sake, we pray. Amen.